For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Let's give it a shot. Let's learn something, see if that helps.
We'll see if that helps.
I want to talk about a Rashi today that is oft quoted and a very difficult one. If you have your chumash, you can look out inside. I'll read you the pasuk. The whole pasuk does not appear on the sheet in front of you, just because the way that the layout of the printing came out. But in the middle of, we're back to Parshas Bo, Perek Yubeis, the 12th chapter in Parshas Bo, where we find ourselves in the story. The basic background is we're in between plague number 9 and number 10. The warning has been given to Paro that the 10th death of the firstborn plague is coming. I'm on page 354. If you want to look at 354. The plague of the deathborn is on its way, and what Hashem does is, after giving that warning, there's a break in the actual story of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim on their way out, and we're given a series of laws about the Korban Pesach. When to bring it, how to bring it, eating of matzah, not eating of chametz. There's that whole series of laws, and amongst that discussion, Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17, page 354, the Torah tells us as follows, Ushmartem es hamatzos. You must safeguard, protect, guard the matzos. Ki be'etzem hayom hazeh, hotesi es tzivo seichem me'eretz Mitzrayim. It was on the essence of this very day I took out your legions from the land of Egypt. Ushmartem es hayom hazeh, v'doro seichem chukasun. Always watch or guard this day, keep it as a yontiv. And then the Torah goes on to say, you'll eat matzos for 7 days, you can't eat chametz, so on and so forth. But it's an interesting phrase, ushmartem et hamatzos. What does it mean to watch or safeguard the matzos? So Rashi tells us, shelo yavo lidei chimutz. You're obligated to watch it, that it shouldn't become chametz. Mikanam, Rashi tells us, it means, tafach tiltush betzon, that if you see it beginning to ferment, beginning to leaven, add cold water. That the cold water will arrest the fermenting process. So you're obligated to watch, guard the matzos. The Moral explains what Rashi means on the first basic level is, you might have thought, this is, if you want to see it inside, it's a note, Mem Aleph, on the bottom right-hand side of the page. Shalot Tomer, you shouldn't say, Kevan She'enu Muzer Rak Ala Chametz. The real prohibition is not having chametz. So you might have thought, Im Yihyeh Chametz Yivayro. So I don't have to watch this process carefully. What happens if it turns to chametz? I'll destroy it. I'll try to make matzahs, and if I'm making matzahs, if it takes too long, I get distracted, so when it becomes chametz, so a person might have thought, it's no big deal, I'll have my little stopwatch, and all the ones that come out good as matzah, I'll eat, and the ones that take too long and become chametz, I'll destroy, and everything is fine. To that, the Torah says, you're not allowed to allow it to become chametz. Your job is to prevent that. Not only that you have to eat matzah and not own or possess or eat chametz, you can't allow a product to become chametz. Ushmartem es hamatzos. That's what that mitzvah means. We're obligated to guard and protect against that from even happening, not just to say, I'll destroy it if it happens. And then Rashi adds, Rabbi Yoshia Omer, he quotes from the sage, the Tana Rabbi Yoshia, Al tehi korei es hamatzos, el es hamitzvos. Torah, of course, is not vowelized. So the spelling of the word is ushmartem es hamatzos, guard or watch matzah. But if I were to show you that word in a vacuum without context, you would read it as mitzvos, guard or watch the mitzvos. Continues Rashi, kederech she'ein machmitzen es hamatzah, in the same way as you have to watch and protect a matzah from becoming chametz, kach ein machmitzen es hamitzvah. So too, you have to watch or guard a mitzvah from becoming chametz. How does a mitzvah become chametz? Says Rashi, in boliotcha se'o samiyad. If it comes to your hand, do it right away. In the same way that when you have matzah, you have to deal with it quickly and not allow it, prevent it from becoming chametz. When a mitzvah comes to your hand, so the Torah says it in a way that can read it both ways. Ushmartem es hamatzos, ushmartem es hamitzos. You have to watch the mitzvah in the same way. Don't allow it to become chametz. Don't allow it to ferment, to become leavened. If it comes to your hand, you have to do it right away. So explains Rashi. Now it's a difficult drasha, because let's just talk about it on the first level. If I have matzah, what happens if I allow matzah to become chametz? So what happens to that product? So it's not just that if I eat it now, I don't fulfill the mitzvah of matzah. It's much worse than that. what happened to the matzah? It became chametz. Do you eat it now? Now you're chayv kares. You're cut off from the Jewish people. So we went from the process of time, not just that by allowing it to sit, you lost out on it becoming matzah, but that it actually became something very negative that carries one of the most severe punishments around. Now it became chametz if you eat it, it's kares. You're out. I have a mitzvah to do. I have a mitzvah, I don't know, to give tzedakah, to take off challah from my dough, whatever the mitzvah I may have in front of me. And I say, you know, I'm just really tired right now. I'm going to do it in 10 minutes. And you come back 10 minutes later and you do it. What happened to that mitzvah?
Still there.
I would have thought it's still there. So to use this language of ushmartim es hamatzah, that you don't allow matzah to become chametz, kach ein machmitzin es hamitzvah, so too you can't allow a mitzvah to become a chametz, it would seem like that's an unfair comparison. It's not accurate. It's still there. It's still a mitzvah. Maybe I lost some extra credit points. I didn't do it right away. But I wouldn't have thought I impacted the mitzvah in any way. But the drasha seems to imply a much stronger, do it right away. Don't allow it to become chametz. That's the issue we'll address tonight. Says the Maral as follows. We won't read from the beginning of the Mason, he just basically just asks the question as I did. Yireh, starting from the underlined section, Yireh, devadai tam echad l'shneim. It seems like there actually is one reason for both. These are both understandings of the pasuk, the way that Chazal are darshaning it, and they come from the same source. Ki osra ha-Torah ha-chametz. We know that the Torah prohibits chametz. You can't allow something to become leavened, to become fermented. Ve-osra gam kein ha-ikuv. And it also prohibits us from allowing it to become chametz. We're responsible, ushmartem es hamatzah, watching it, guarding it, not allowing it to become chametz. Why? Shaharei lo hispik lahachmetz. Because in the story of the Yitzias Mitzrayim, the Jewish people didn't have time to allow their dough to become chametz. So they didn't have a chance to allow it to become chametz. Now we're obligated in reenacting that, in preventing our dough from becoming chametz. Just like the Jews did, we did. So far, so good? That's actually a very difficult statement that I just made. I'll ask the question that I'm about to ask through a story. It's not my story. Rabbi Yeshua Hartman, who wrote the footnotes here on the bottom of our sefer that we're using. He lives in England now. He came here to Atlanta a couple of years back already, and he spoke. And one of the things he said over was the following. Told over a story. The majority of the story, I would say 90% is true, 10% is not true, and you could try to figure out which part is true and which part is not true. There's a fellow named Chizkiyahu who was in the 1976 hijacking of the, I believe it was an Air France plane that landed in Entebbe, in Africa. And the Jewish commandos successfully raided the airport and were able to evacuate the hostages with, I think only one hostage was actually killed in the operation. It was a magnificent and miraculous operation. So Chizkio was there. And he was saved. And he was an English speaker. So he was interviewed. The story goes that it was very hot. It was middle of the night, July, in Africa. It was pretty hot. And the airport terminal was not air-conditioned. So it was a steam bath, which is, and they were there for a couple of days, very little water. So at night, when they would sleep, they would basically sleep with almost no clothing on, bare minimum, just in an attempt not to overheat and stay cool. And the raid took place in the middle of the night. So in pitch black, without lights, all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, it was total pandemonium and chaos as the Israeli army descends and there's a firefight and grenades are going off and the army is yelling for everybody to quickly get out and evacuate. So he was sleeping without his pants and without his shirt and without his glasses. And his belt had been taken off of his pants. And in the middle of the night, all of a sudden, they're awoken by gunshots and Israeli commandos screaming at them to move. And so the whole operation took 90 minutes from the time they landed until the time they took off. And all the other stuff that went in between. It's very quick. So in the chaos, he was able to grab his pants and his shirt and his glasses, but he couldn't find his belt in the darkness. So he didn't care. He didn't have his belt. Too quick. So he just ran. So he ran, holding onto his pants, that his pants shouldn't fall off while he's running through the terminal, but he didn't have his belt. And when they landed back in Israel, all of the English-speaking news agencies looking for someone to interview who spoke English, so he was a hot item to be able to interview because he was an English speaker. And you can see in the footage that like every couple of seconds he's reaching down to hold up his pants while he's being interviewed, telling the story about what happened. Settles in Israel, and he, for his family, establishes a day of hodah, of thanks, in which on the day of the raid, in commemoration on that day every year, he wants all of his family to come together to his apartment, and he was going to throw a feast in which he'll recount the story to them, and he will give thanks to Hashem for the fact that he was spoken. And he called the day Chag HaChagurot, the day of the belt. And the requirement was that all of his family members and friends that come to celebrate with him, everybody comes without belts to celebrate with him what happened, that the whole thing happened so fast that he didn't have an opportunity to grab his belt. And they all run around the table recounting what it was like holding up their pants because they didn't have a belt. So as I said, 90% of that story is true and 10% is not true. So which part would you guess is not true? So I would hope you'd guess that it would be the part of him naming the holiday of belts, and the requirement to show up at his house without a belt. Why would that be silly if it were true? Why is that part of the story silliness?
Maybe for a holiday. It's not a lesson.
Correct. It's irrelevant. It's a cute detail in the story, but it's not relevant to the story. The story is you are hijacked. The Israeli army, with great siyata d'shmaya and divine assistance, came in and saved you, and now you want to give thanks every year. Isn't it cute how it happened so fast that you weren't able to find your belt in the darkness? It's a cute detail, but it's not relevant. It's not the essence of the day. You certainly wouldn't name the holiday Chag HaChagurot. That's not what it's about. And that everybody has to come without their belts to your house because it's missing the point. So Rav Hartman used that story and asked, and yet we do this every year. Not only is Pesach called in the Torah Chag HaMatzos, it's called Chag HaMatzos, the holiday of the matzah. We have to clean our homes. We have to only eat matzah. And we're going to tell the story, Matzah zu she'anu ochlim yisein in the Haggadah. This matzah that we're eating, al shum ma, al shum shelo, hispikum batekum shel avoseinu, lahachmet, the dough of our forefathers did not have the opportunity to rise till Hashem revealed himself and took us out. Is that so different than my belt story? Okay, it happened quickly. There's a big story here. 10 plagues. We were in Egypt for a long time. Hashem took us out, gave us the Torah eventually. Like, the big important stuff. Chag HaMatzah? It's the holiday of matzah? Let's say it took an extra 15 minutes. How long does it take for dough to rise? How long? 18 minutes? Let's say it took an extra 18 minutes. Let's say it took an extra hour. And they had bread. Would this story be any different if it took an extra hour and we had bread? Anything? I don't think so. Well, apparently I'm wrong. Because we name the holiday and we make a big deal about the matzah. It's a detail. Important detail, not important detail. Would the story be any different without it? I can make an argument, no. And I'm wrong. Question is why? Says the Maharal. The Inyan Zem, 4 lines from the bottom on the left-hand column, 2 lines on the other line right there, if anybody wants to call me in time. The Inyan Zem, Yom Mivnei, Shenigle Melech Malchei Amlochem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because Hashem revealed himself, V'lo Hispik Isosam Lahachmet. And once he revealed himself, there was no time for the dough to become chametz. Once Hashem, the King of Kings, reveals himself, Ein Kan Ikov. Then there's no delay, there's no withholding, nothing stops the process once he's been revealed. We'll explain this hopefully in a second as best we can. Kima'asav b'mehiros, because his actions are quick, with alacrity, uvekoyach gadol, and with great strength, ad she'ein kan ikov, until there is no holding back, there's no withholding. To attempt to understand what I think he's trying to say, so there's an idea we touched on a couple of weeks ago in a drasha also, maybe in the shiur. The idea of past, present, and future is a creation. When Hashem created the world, He added the elements of time, and we human beings live through time linearly. The moment we're in right now always follows the moment that just happened a moment before, and always precedes the coming moment. That's just the way that we go through life. We can never go backwards or forwards. We can't ever live the past again, and we can never live the future before it happens. We are bound by that unending, incessant march of time as it happens. It's our existence. We don't ever stop to think about that because we like to think about it with like movies like Back to the Future or, you know, ideas about going into the future or the past because it's a cool thought because it's so impossible. What would it be like? But Hashem isn't bound by that. He's above Haya, Hove, Viya, was, is, and will be in a way which isn't bound by that. Hard for us to grasp that concept, but just to imagine when you see a film for the second, third, or fourth time. Where as you're watching it, you actually already know what's going to happen, and you remember very clearly what did already happen, and you're watching it now at the stage that it's up to, but you see the big picture, or reading a book for that second or third time. It's a totally different experience than when you read it for the first time. First time, it's harder to remember the details that happened, what you've already read, and all the plot twists are taking you in a way you have no idea where this is going to end up. I don't know what's going to happen, which is what the author wants. The director wants. But if you've already read it, then you say, like, oh yeah, I see that plot. This looks like it's going to be scary. But it's wrong. Like, watching a film with somebody who's already seen it once is the worst. Because you're supposed to be taken through this process of the ups and the downs and the twists and the excitement and the climax, and the person next is always ruining it. Like, don't worry, he's not going to die. Like, that it's all building up. Oh, this is going to be funny. Like, that's the worst. Like, if you watch it with children, always ruin it. This is going to be so funny. Watch this. It's not funny anymore because what's funny about it is the surprise element. But as soon as someone says, oh, watch this. This is so funny. Or, like, watching with kids, like, they think you don't get it. So they explain to you what's going on in front of you. The whole experience is lost. But it would be like that for ourselves if we'd already seen it once. So Hashem lives life again. It's a not perfect example, but it's as close as we can get to trying to grasp what it's like not being bound by time. We are bound by time. We live through each film as it's happening for the first time. No going back, no going forward. It is. But someone not bound by time, the Ribbono Shel Olam, not bound by time, doesn't have that. That's manifest, says the Maral, by mehirus, by quickness. Because things that are bound by time take time to develop. Our lives take time to develop. A child, it takes 9 months to develop. Can't this go faster? No, it can't. Simple things, like trying to feed a 6-month-old. Like, isn't there a way to just stuff this whole bottle, a jar of food into your body? Like, why do I have to sit here for 10 minutes? Because you do. That's part of the human condition. Flowers, trees, our own personal development, our lives, our jobs, it takes time. That's part of the human condition being bound by time, where there is a past, a present, and a future, and they are distinct and separate, and we just move through that. We have a frustration with that, a microwave generation, where this should go faster. But life doesn't work that way. And however fast our internet speed is, but life still takes time. Just does. Godliness doesn't. The essence of being above time, not being bound by it, underneath it, this idea of past, present, future, is that things aren't limited by time. There's no such thing. Past, present, it's all one. It's all simultaneous. I don't have to wait for things in the past to flourish and develop. I don't have to wait for the future to play itself out, as we always say. Let's just wait and see what happens. There's no such thing. I know the whole story all at once. It's hard for us to grasp. The words are clumsy trying to explain that. But the Maral says, the essence of that divine being, not being bound by time, is that I don't have to wait for things. There's no such thing. Wait for what? It's all together, past, present, future. And that's what he means. I'm just going to read back what I said again, just hopefully with a little bit of understanding. He writes, when Hashem reveals Himself at the Seder, that first original Seder, and Hashem reveals Himself, there was no time for their dough to rise. The way I asked the question is the wrong question. What if it would take an extra hour? It would have made a difference in the story, right? No, it wouldn't have. There's no such thing of it being an extra hour. Once Hashem reveals Himself and says it's redemption time, it is by definition b'mehiras. It's immediate. Yeshua Hashem keharafayin. The salvation of Hashem happens. Once it happens, it's a blink. Why? Not because He likes to do things quickly. It's because it is. Once He's revealed Himself into this world, the divine has appeared, manifest in a physical, finite world that is bound by time, and now it's been interacted with in that open, revealed, redemptive way from that which is not, the redemption, it has to be that way, in which it's immediate. U'me'achar shenigla aleihem melech malchei hamlochim ein kan ikos. Once Hashem has revealed Himself, there can't be any type of procrastination. It can't be. By definition, it has to be immediate. Kimas of bimihiros, His actions are always done with alacrity, with quickness, with a koach gadol at she'ein kan ikov. There is no withholding or preventing. As best as we understand that, Maral then continues and says, "V'ha inyanim hasichliim pu'ol asam shelo bizman." That's also true by all spiritual matters. Anything spiritual is by definition not from this world. We're in the material, mundane world. Spiritual entities, spiritual activities are, so to speak, above Zman. They're timeless. They don't function from within the world of time. Torah is timeless. It's eternal. When Jews connect themselves to the eternity of Torah, they become eternal, which is why we are eternal. We're not bound by time. The Jewish people should have disappeared long ago, like all living things eventually break down and die. All societies do. All empires do. And we don't. Because in our finite way of human beings individually die, but the people is eternal and lives on. Because we're attached to the Torah, which is sichli, which is intellectual, so to speak. It's all mind-based. It's not worldly. And that's also not bound by time, which is why eventually we will live forever also. There will be a concept of tchiyas hameis in which we are no longer bound by that concept of time. Ulekach tziva, continues the Maharal, she'en machmitzen es hamatzah. That's why we have a mitzvah that says don't allow the matzah to become chametz. Not just eat matzah and don't eat chametz or own chametz. Stop the process. We're required on Pesach to arrest the development of chametz. Why? Lahodia, it's a lesson in there. Right? My belt story was to drive this point home. Isn't it just the details and a route? Okay, it happened quickly. What if it happened? No. You have to make a big deal about Chag HaMatzos, because you know what it means that it happened quickly? It means that it was a spiritual revelation of Hashem that has to happen that way. Lahodia ki pu'ulas Hashem yisbarach b'lizman klal. When Hashem reveals that there is no time, so you stop the chametz from happening. You're required to not allow matzah to become chametz. Va'af mitzvah elokim. That concept applies to all of Hashem's mitzvah, says the Maharal. Shidvar Hashem. Every mitzvah we have is the taking of the spiritual and infusing the mundane with that. Mitzvah is take a lulav and an esrog. It's just a branch, it's a tree, it's a fruit. Make it holy. Take your challah dough and separate challah from it. Every mitzvah is taking the world we live in and infusing the Dvar Hashem into it. So habal liyadcha al tachmitzena. So when it comes to your hand, don't allow it to become chametz. What would it mean to take a mitzvah and to say, whatever, it's fine, I'll do it later? Ki Dvar Hashem hu mutol olav lasos b'lizman. When you have the Dvar Hashem, when you have the godliness in front of you, that has to be done without time passing. Lo kemo dvarim shel chol shehim gashmim shehim tachat hazman nesunim. Not like the mundane. The mundane are within the realm of time, past, present, future. You get to when it gets to, it develops as it develops. Fine. Aval eilu dvarim einim tachat hazman. But every mitzvah we're doing, what are we trying to accomplish? We're trying to say, this world that I live in is really infused with something deeper, something higher, something more spiritual. I'm going to take that spirituality and infuse the mundane with that. Well, if you do that, tzarech lasosom miyad, you have to do them right away. Because what are you saying if you don't do them right away? All right, well, it's a regular thing. It's a mundane. I'll get to it. V'zehu das chachamim, and that is exactly what the chachamim mean. V'im hu machmes es hamitzvah. If you take a mitzvah and you say, I'll do it in 15 minutes, pogeim es hamitzvah, you have blemished the mitzvah. Ki'ilu ha'isadavar shuhu tachas hazman, as if it is something which was under time, so to speak, under the realm, under the dominion of time, as opposed to something infused with ruchnius and spirituality, which is l'mayla min hazman, which is above. So that the Maral argues, when you say to the guy at the door, I'm busy now, I'm tired, I'll come back in 10 minutes. I have a mitzvah, I'll do it later. I'll get to the challah later, I'll get to whatever it is that I'm doing later. What you've done is you've taken a mitzvah, which is a mundane entity activity, which was supposed to be infused with the Devar Hashem, supposed to be infused with the element which comes from a place above time, and said, it's not, it's a regular mundane world, I'll get to it later. You have been pogame es ha-mitzvah. You've blemished the mitzvah. We started with, I don't understand. Matzah, if I wait too long, it becomes chametz. It doesn't just become invalid. It becomes, it flips from the side of good to the side of evil. It becomes chametz. So the mitzvah, I get to it later. It's still there, right? Well, yeah. Says, well, it's still there, but it's blemished. Intrinsically. It's not just that you don't get extra credit points for doing it quickly. You've blemished the mitzvah by saying, it's not really infused with that element of godliness that says, I'm changing the mundane, I'm elevating the mundane, I'm bringing in that which, the divine element which is above Zman, I see that in this and I'm doing it that way. I'll get to it whenever I get to it. It's like anything else in the world.
We're exempt from time bound.
Correct.
So I feel like once I do get to it, that's great. Like
so in those examples, you're right. In other words, those probably poor choices of examples. And as I gave it, like a Lulav Esrog example, it's stuck as on a time-bound mitzvah. A person came in front of you, so here's an opportunity to help them. But 100%, if there's a time-bound mitzvah, a woman is not obligated, and therefore it's not necessary. You wouldn't have mitzvah bali aden, or the mitzvah which comes to your hand. It's not, technically not in my hand. I don't have the obligation to do this in the first place. In those examples, 100%. But even in those, you could have the concept of infusing that. It's something that I have the opportunity to do now, so I don't want to let it sit because I'm trying to infuse it with that element. You have the time-bound element of time dictating when the mitzvah applies, and then you have the time element of, well, now that it applies, how do I relate to it? And something that I just put on my to-do list I'll eventually get to, or now that time kicked it into action, therefore, as Chazal say, Al tach mitzen, don't allow it to become chametz, do it right away, as to infuse it with that element of the divine when you have the opportunity to.
What if you have a reason that you're organizing your day around the mitzvah? Like I'm just thinking of challah, for example. There's several reasons why I wouldn't make it right then, and maybe I want it fresh for Shabbos, maybe I want to get some other stuff out
of the way. Yeah, 100%.
So it's just saying to have the attitude.
With the attitude in that situation, in other words, that would be a matter where you've actually made the dough, and you're saying, I'm not making the dough. Like, here's the mitzvah, it needs to be done. So there's an attitude of when you have the opportunity to do it, where I do it right away. If it's not a good time to make the dough, then 100%. It's a general attitude as to how do we approach the opportunities for mitzvah. And I'll speak about myself. Many times it's a matter of like, I'll get to it. As opposed to, that's what I'm doing right now. If I have this opportunity, I want to make sure that that's what I get to. And that's what Chazal says, Shmartem et ha-matzos, is to be read, Shmartem et ha-mitzos. In the same way as it's not just a matter of when it comes to matzah, alright, if it becomes chametz, I'll throw it out and destroy it. No. Your job is to make sure it doesn't become chametz. Your job is, as mitzvah opportunities provide themselves, the attitude is not to allow it to become chametz, because it's pogame. It blemishes, so to speak, the mitzvah, because it infuses this worldliness, when really it's supposed to be infused with a spiritual worldliness into it, and that worldliness is from a place coming from above time, not limited by it. Again, the words are clumsy. Above time, below time, bound by time. It's a clumsy concept to understand. Anytime you're trying to explain Ruchnius, it's a little bit clumsy. And I hope I'm doing the Maral justice in trying to explain how he's understanding this Chazal, but that's how, as best I can with the words that I have, trying to understand how he understands that idea. All right, hope that helps in your Pesach experience, at least as you feel like you're rushing towards things and it infuses some spirituality into the difficulty of the day. All right, let me mention Dvar Halacha, finish up our discussion of changing locations. So we've been discussing about this for a couple of weeks. Let's finish up. I hope it'll finish up. A quick summary. What we've done so far is, if you're eating non-mizonos or hamotzi products, fish, fruits, vegetables, ice cream, coffee kind of thing, general assumption when you leave your home, or the place in which you're eating, that is the end of your bracha. You have, by definition, ended your meal with leaving, and therefore if you wanted to continue eating, you'd have to make a new bracha. And we discussed the exceptions to that, the concept of the traveler, the concept where you never really intended to stay here anyway from the very beginning, as you were making your bracha in Starbucks while you were walking out, or just waiting for the next person to get their coffee. In those situations where it would continue. That's the general rule, but when you do leave, then your bracha has ended. We spoke about mezonos and hamotzi products where that does not apply, because since you're required to go back to the place where you ate to make your bracha achrona, so I'm not considered as if I ended. I had a piece of pizza here, I need to come back here. So when I leave, my meal's not done, because I have to come back. So therefore I have two options in front of me. I can either continue eating where I am, my new place, because my bracha is still going, and then make my bracha achrona there in the new place. Or I can come back and continue eating, but I don't have to make a new bracha because my meal is still going on. Today, we'll discuss a third exception, is going back to the original foods, the ice cream, fruit, vegetables, where generally leaving is an end. There's an exception to that if you were eating in a group and somebody in the group stayed behind. That if you had a party of at least two people or three people, and one person has to leave. You're all drinking coffee at Starbucks. And all of a sudden, it's 1 o'clock, and you say, I don't have a carpool. And so then you quickly run out, you pick up your kid, and you come back to Starbucks. So at that scenario, if you had done that by yourself, where you were just working on, you're playing around with your phone or your computer, and you had left and come back, you'd have to make another shahako when you came back. Because the essence of leaving ended your meal. But if you left at least one other person, just one other person, at the table, they were still chatting, and you leave, and then you come back, even though you're only working off a shahakol hadama or ha'et type of bracha, the fact that someone stayed behind keeps your bracha going, and you would not need to make another bracha when you come back. The requirement for that is, A, at least one person is still there, and B, you come back to the place where you started. Meaning if you, let's say you did that, and then you got back to your car, and you picked up your child, and you went home, so then the fact that there's still two people chatting at Starbucks doesn't really help you. Your meal has ended. Because the only reason why your meal hasn't ended is because you're still part of the party. But if you were to go home, pick up your kid and go home, go to school, pick up and go home, and you wanted to finish your coffee, then this doesn't make a difference. And the fact that you were drinking a shahakal and you left would end that bracha, you'd make a new one. But if you returned to Starbucks, this would apply in your own home, so you stepped outside, you went somewhere, you came back, you're at someone else's house, you ran an errand, you came back. If there were people still eating and you came back to join them, then that would continue that bracha. I don't know how common that is, but it's worth noting if it ever does happen in a scenario where you were at a little group and you realize you forgot that. I don't know how uncommon it is. You're sitting around a Shabbos afternoon munching on fruit, and then you go walk a child. That would, I guess, be a classic example. You go walk a child over to a friend, and then you come back. You say, well, now what do? I was just munching on this fruit. Do I need to make a new bracha or not? So if everybody was actually sitting together eating, at the table, then the answer would be no.
What if you're not sure in one of these situations, it's better to do without the bracha, right?
Yeah, always. That's always a general rule.
You feel more comfortable to make another bracha.
Correct. And so if you're not sure, the best thing is to make your bracha achrona before you leave. Like, I'm not sure what's going to happen, because life is, I don't know if I'm coming back, I'm staying, who knows how long it's going to be. End that meal, I'm done, I'm leaving, I'm going to get my child. But sometimes it's clear, I'm just, it's two doors down. He's going to go get him and come back. So if there are people there that are eating and you're rejoining them, then you wouldn't have to make another bracha. Whereas you yourself, if you were just munching on some fruit, reading a book, and like, oh, I've got to go pick up my child, and you go two doors down, when you come back, even though you didn't make a bracha achrona from the first eating because you just ran out to go get them and you came back, like, oh, it's over because I left. I left my house, I went two doors down, I can't see my home from where I am, that whole thing is over. I need to make another bracha when I continue eating my watermelon, jelly beans, coffee, ice cream, whatever it is that you're munching on, even though it was only 2 minutes and I ran out, but that's it. You ended your meal by leaving. But if there was a group of people there eating together, and not just that there were people in your home, you were sitting at the table eating together, and then you ran out to pick someone up and came back, then you would not make a new bracha.
Even if some of those other people had left?
No, they have to, you have to rejoin them. In other words, they're keeping the meal alive.
Yeah, some people came.
At least one that was there.
Yeah, you need somebody who was there to keep that meal alive, mm-hmm. For you. Otherwise, once your meal's ended, you can't keep that bracha going. But again, I don't know how common it is, but it's worth noting. I just imagine all these things eventually happen, and hopefully you'll remember as why when it does. All right, so we'll be on break till after Pesach. It's Hashem.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.